This is Henry Simon, bringing you another story from my files here at the Missing Persons Bureau.
In these stories of the Missing Persons Bureau, dramatized for Henry Simon by Ross Napier, names and addresses have, for obvious reasons, been changed. In one moment, the search for Jane Heathcote, address unknown. And here again is Henry Simon.
It was a Monday morning in the spring of 1952. The sun was warm and shone through the open window of my office here at the Missing Persons Bureau. A pleasant reminder that winter was done and summer on its way. My first appointment of the day was listed for 11 o'clock. And at exactly 2 minutes to the hour, my secretary rang through to announce the arrival of Mrs. Audrey Heathcote, who was duly ushered into my presence. With darkish tinted hair and an upright carriage, she bore the traces of a youthful beauty. And although the years were beginning to tell upon her figure and her complexion, she was still a remarkably fine-looking woman.
I hate to be a trouble, Mr. Simon, but do you think I might prevail on you for a glass of water?
By all means. Unless, of course, you prefer coffee or tea, I can easily have my secretary send down for some.
No, really. It's very kind of you, but water will do nicely, thanks. Just a sip.
As you wish. There.
Oh, thank you so much. Lovely. There's nothing quite so refreshing as water, do you think? I simply adore it when I'm thirsty. Oh, but I see you're a busy man, so I won't waste your time with idle chatter. I'm here about my daughter, Jane.
Yes?
She's left home, Mr. Simon. I've had no word from her for 3 weeks.
Oh. How old is she?
32.
32?
31, actually. She has a birthday next month.
You astound me, Mrs. Heathcote. I'd never have thought that you, that a woman...
I was married at 17, Mr. Simon. Jane was born a year later. To spare you the effort of calculation, that makes me 49.
An extremely youthful 49, if I may say so.
Oh, you may indeed. Thank you.
You have no other children?
No, only Jane. She's been a great comfort to me over the years.
She lives with you?
She was living with me. Up to 3 weeks ago, we shared a flat at Hammersmith.
And her father?
Her father and I were divorced 18 years ago.
I see. What were the circumstances surrounding her departure, exactly?
We had a slight difference of opinion.
Mm-hmm. About what?
Well, it seems rather ridiculous, but... Well, she bought a dress which I didn't like. I told her it didn't suit her, that it was years too young for her. I wasn't criticizing her, you understand. I was merely pointing out that one has to dress according to one's age and appearance. However, she took offense. And before either of us realized it, we were involved in a somewhat heated argument.
Which culminated in her leaving home?
Well, yes. She simply packed her bags and flounced out.
Without giving you any idea at all of where she might be going?
Quite frankly, at the time, I don't think she knew herself. It was all so sudden and unexpected.
She isn't married, of course.
Oh, no.
Or romantically entangled?
No. She rather shrinks from male company.
Oh?
I don't know why, but men seem to upset her.
Upset her? In what way?
Make her nervous. I think perhaps she's developed a sort of complex about her looks.
Her looks?
She's a very plain girl. She never held any attraction for the opposite sex at all. At the few parties she went to in her teens, she invariably ended up sitting in a corner by herself. No one seemed to notice her. Or if they did, it was more out of sympathy than interest. I remember she always came home dreadfully upset. There was nothing, never anything that I could say or do to console her.
Good many teenagers go through that stage, you know?
True, but most of them get over it. Jane didn't. By the time she was 20, she'd practically stopped going out altogether. And in each succeeding year, she got worse.
So there are no men in her life at all?
No, there never have been.
Did she have a job of any kind?
Since she left school, she must have had upward of 50 jobs. None of them have ever lasted more than 3 months at the outside. Either she doesn't like the work, or she doesn't like her employers. It's always the same story.
Was she working at the time that she left home?
No, she was between jobs.
Had she anything in view?
She had some idea of starting a nursery school.
On her own or with someone else?
On her own. She's very fond of children.
Do you believe that she was serious?
Not really. She's always talking of doing something or other, then changing her mind.
Is she fitted for any special occupation?
She's quite an efficient shorthand typist.
So most of the jobs she's had would have been in offices?
Most of them, yes.
Does she have any close friends?
Well, I wouldn't say they were close, but she does have a few friends. Women friends.
Have you made any effort to contact them?
I phoned all the ones I could think of. But for all they could tell me, I might have saved myself the time.
I see. What other inquiries have you made?
None, I'm afraid. The point is, I was so sure she'd be back. She'd never been away on her own before. For that matter, she's never been apart from me. Not for any length of time. It seems extraordinary she should suddenly launch out by herself.
In view of what you've just told me, it might not be a bad thing.
Believe me, Mr. Simon, I'd like to think some good might come of it. But it's no use. I know her too well. That's why I'm so worried.
Yes. Referring to her father for a moment.
What about him?
Is he still alive?
So far as I know. I haven't seen him for more than 12 years.
Is it possible that Jane might have turned to him?
Hardly. She was only a child when the divorce went through.
13, 14. I should imagine she'd remember him quite well, even if she hadn't seen him since.
She hadn't. I can vouch for that.
Any idea at all where I might contact?
Oh, there's no point in dragging George into it. He'd be the last person she turned to.
Even so, I'd rather like to know where I can reach him, just in case.
We'll have to check with Daphne.
Daphne?
Daphne Collins, his sister. She was living at Earl's Court a few years ago. She's probably still there. If she is, the address will be in the phone book. If not, my solicitors, Hancock and Dealey, might have some record. For my own part, I haven't a notion where he might be.
Can you think of anyone else she could have gone to?
No.
How was she placed for money?
I couldn't be sure, but fairly well, I should say. She didn't spend much, and as well as any salary she earned, I gave her an allowance of £8 a week.
Did she have her own bank account?
She could have done, I suppose. I never really thought about it. As you may have guessed, I'm reasonably well off. Money doesn't mean that much to me.
You're very fortunate.
In that respect, yes. But what I meant was, I've never kept any check on her spending, or inquired what she did with the money I gave her.
Quite. Do you have a photograph of her at all?
Yes, actually, I have quite a few here. This one's the most recent.
Oh, thank you.
It was taken about 2 years ago, when we were on holiday on Swansea. Quite a good likeness.
Hmm.
You can see what I mean about her being plain. It's really most odd she should have turned out as she did. Whatever else she may have lacked, her father had exceptional good looks. I wasn't altogether unattractive myself.
What's this one?
Oh. Must have slipped in by mistake. That's her as a baby. Wasn't she the cutest thing?
Very quaint.
Oh, what a pity she had to grow up.
Oh, I don't know, Chief. She doesn't look that bad to me.
Nor to me, Stanley. But to her mother, she apparently does.
She could use a sharper hairstyle, smarter clothes, maybe. Otherwise, she's fair enough. Of course, you can never really tell from a photograph.
No. You say you saw Mrs. Heathcote?
Yeah, she went out. For 49, she's quite a slasher.
She looks a lot younger.
How long is it since the divorce?
18 years.
She'd only have been her daughter's age then. It's queer she didn't marry again.
Yes, it is, rather.
Who divorced who and for what? She tell you?
No, she's rather vague about that. Although she did say they hadn't been in touch for more than 12 years.
Does he pay her alimony, anything like that?
Apparently not.
Well, maybe he divorced her.
Well, she got the custody of the child. Not that that means much, of course. Could have been by mutual consent. Then again, he's had nothing at all to do with the daughter, either.
You figure it's worth checking with him?
I'm inclined to think it might be, yes. Certainly couldn't do any harm.
Who should I approach, his sister or the solicitors?
Sister might be simpler. I've got her address here somewhere.
Oh, she was in the phone book, huh?
Her husband was, yes.
Hmm.
Oh, here we are. It's 26 Mortimer Road, Earl's Court. Apart from anything else, I felt it was necessary to contact our client's former husband, George Heathcote, before proceeding further, if only to ascertain a further slant on the missing Jane Heathcote's background. Taking a cab to Earl's Court, Studdy duly alighted at the entrance to number 26 Mortimer Road, which was a narrow brick home fronting the street. In answer to his ring, the front door was opened by a shortish, round-faced woman who identified herself as Daphne Collins, George Heathcote's younger sister.
Oh, yes, Mr. Studdy, George is still alive right enough. He married again a few years ago. He and his wife have a home in Ealing, 43 Rochester Avenue.
Rochester Avenue.
May I ask just why it is you're so anxious to see him?
His daughter has disappeared.
Daughter? Oh, you mean Jane?
Yeah. We figure she might have looked him up.
But he hasn't had anything to do with her since he and Audrey were divorced. She was only a schoolgirl then.
Even so, you never tell, you know.
Oh, that poor child. George should never have left her with Audrey.
Did he have any choice?
He certainly did. Audrey was the guilty party. He could have had custody if he'd wanted to.
So he divorced her, huh?
She went off with another man. What else could he do?
And Jane?
She took Jane with her. That was the most scandalous part of it.
And in spite of all of this, he was still prepared to relinquish custody?
Oh, don't ask me why. I could never understand it. I mean, it wasn't as if it was Audrey's first lapse. During the time they were married, she had affairs with several different men. She was like that. Not that she didn't love George. In her own way, I think she did. She just couldn't help herself. You can imagine the environment Jane was brought up in.
Roughly.
She was only 13 at the time of the divorce. My goodness. That'd make her over 30 now.
Going on 32.
Oh, it doesn't seem possible. People grow up so fast these days.
Some people do.
Pardon?
The rest just get older.
Henry Simon returns to continue this story in just a moment. And here again is Henry Simon.
In certain respects, the picture was not an unfamiliar one. Jane Heathcote was the product of a broken marriage. Due to her mother's waywardness, she'd been deprived of a father at the tender age of 13 and had subsequently grown up under her mother's wing. It seems strange, however, that George Heathcote had had nothing at all to do with his daughter after the divorce, had in actual fact turned his back upon her completely, leaving her in the care of a woman who had proved herself to be both unfit as a wife and as a mother. This, of course, was only one side of the story. We had yet to hear the other. And it was to this end that Studdy paid a visit to the home of George Heathcote in Rochester Avenue, Ealing. Heathcote, it transpired, had a slight chill at the time and was spending the day in bed. Graying-haired and stoutish, he was propped up on pillows, sucking a cough drop and looking anything but cheerful.
I hope you don't mind the hospital atmosphere, Mr. Studdy. My wife's a great one for dosing me up with this, that, and the other. Have a mental.
No, thanks. A little strong for me. Getting back to your daughter for a moment, she hasn't been here at all, I suppose.
Here? Why should she come here?
To see you, maybe?
My dear Studdy, I doubt if she'd even remember me after all this time. Yeah, she was still at school when I saw her last.
You've had no contact with her whatever since the divorce, huh?
No, none.
You mind telling me why not?
Well, I hold the view that when a husband and wife separate, the break should be a clean one, particularly if any children are involved. Whichever parent forgoes custody should step right out of the picture and stay out, which is exactly what I've done. I don't hold with this business of bringing up a child in two camps. It's rank stupidity.
Well, that theory may be sound enough in certain respects, but in this case, it seems a little extreme.
Mm-hmm.
You and your daughter were the innocent parties in the divorce. Why should you be the ones to suffer?
Jane was more attached to her mother than she ever was to me. To have separated them would have been little short of criminal. Besides, Jane herself expressed a desire to remain with Audrey.
So it was actually she who made the decision, huh?
Well, let's say she helped me to make it.
And you honestly feel it was the right one?
I surely do.
In spite of what's happened?
Well, the girl's 32 years of age, Mr. Studdy. In fact, she's no longer a girl. She's a woman. At liberty to do what she pleases.
That still doesn't figure. I just can't see any father worth his soul walking out on his daughter the way you did without a backward glance. In theory, it might work, sure, but not in practice.
You're a hard man to convince.
I'm paid to be.
You don't believe what I've told you, is that it?
Frankly, no. Suppose you give it to me straight, huh? I'm bound to hit the truth sooner or later, so why not save me the trouble of digging further? Needless to say, anything you tell me will be treated as strictly confidential.
I gave old Jimmy word I'd never speak of it to another living soul, for James' sake.
I think the circumstances warrant you making me the exception.
Jane isn't really my daughter, Mr. Steady.
No?
When Audrey and I married, she was already pregnant. I wasn't the father.
Who was the father?
I don't know.
Well, there you have it, Chief. If nothing else, it explains his conduct. Jane isn't his daughter.
Surely the woman must have some idea who the father was.
Heathcote doesn't seem to think so.
Gave me no indication at all that such a state of affairs existed. To the contrary, she went to some sort of pains to create exactly the opposite impression.
Well, I guess that's natural enough. It's not the sort of thing she'd wave a flag about. Anyway, according to Heathcote, he married her in full knowledge of her condition, in the belief that she'd stick to the path of virtue from then on. He was prepared to accept the child as his and make a go of it, but things didn't work out that way. Far from reforming, his wife went from bad to worse. She had one affair after another, finally capping it off by clearing out with another guy and taking the kid with her. Well, at that point, he drew the line, sued for divorce. And as Jane wasn't his child anyway, he relinquished all claim to her custody.
No one else knew about her not being his daughter?
Doesn't appear so.
Hmm.
So where do we go from here?
Well, perhaps we might check with a few of her friends.
Jane's?
Yes. I've got three names listed here. Supplied by Mrs. Heathcote. She's already been in touch with them, to no avail. Still, they might tell us just a little more than they've told her.
What sort of friends?
Female. None of them terribly close, but friends, nevertheless.
Fair enough. You got the addresses there? I'll look them up right away.
It was after 6 in the evening when Study left the office. His first port of call was the flat of one Eleanor Baxter in Cheney Walk. A tall, thin girl, she was unmarried and lived on her own, her acquaintance with our quarry having stemmed from the fact that they'd worked together in the same office for some months.
There's really very little I can tell you, Mr. Study. I really didn't know Jane that well.
You can't think of anywhere she might have gone?
I'm afraid not. I hadn't seen her for 6 weeks or more. Well, not since the evening she asked me over to dinner. That's how I came to meet Mrs. Heathcote, by the way.
Uh-huh. How were relations between them?
Well, I don't know. It's difficult to say. They had so little in common. I mean, Mrs. Heathcote is such a vivacious, lively person. Although I must admit I didn't exactly see her to her best advantage that night. It was rather embarrassing, really.
Uh-huh.
Well, Jane and I had dinner alone in the flat, and Mrs. Heathcote wasn't expected home until quite late, but somewhere about 10 she came in with some man. I don't know who he was, and I'm pretty sure Jane didn't either. But he acted as if he owned the place, and certainly as if he owned Mrs. Heathcote. I don't know if they'd had a little too much to drink or not, but, well, they did carry on, rather.
How do you mean?
Well, kissing and so forth. I couldn't help being a little shocked.
Hmm. How did Jane react to it?
I'm not quite sure, but somehow I got the idea it wasn't the first time it had happened. Mrs. Heathcote bringing a man home, I mean.
Hmm.
It's a dreadful thing to say about anybody I know, but, well, I think she might be one of those women who...
Yeah?
People have all kinds of addictions. Some to drink, others to drugs.
And Mrs. Heathcote?
I have a feeling hers is to men.
The second name on the agent's list was a Miss Helen Gurney, who had rooms in Fulham and who had known our quarry for a number of years. Plumpish, with a pleasant face, she'd no hesitation in airing her considered opinion of Audrey Heathcote, whom she'd met on several occasions.
The woman's a very poor type, in my opinion. How Jane put up with her for so long, I'll never know. If she'd been my mother, I'd have disowned her years ago.
When was the last time you saw her, Jane?
We went to the cinema one night, about a month ago.
How'd she seem then?
Much the same as usual.
She didn't give you any indication that she might be leaving home?
No, if she had, I'd have thrown a party. Anything to get her away from that woman. Oh, I'm so glad she's finally made the break. Now she might have a chance to lead a life of her own. Have a little fun for a change.
Is there anybody you can think of she might have turned to?
Not really. Unless...
Yeah?
Well, she was very friendly with Mr. Heston.
Mr. Heston?
The vicar at St. Michael's. She used to help him quite a bit, organizing church functions and the like.
I didn't think she had any male friends.
Well, I wouldn't exactly call Mr. Heston that. He's well over 60 and a married man into the bargain. But she's always thought a great deal of him. That I know. She could easily have gone to him for advice. In fact, if that's what she wanted, he'd be the first person she'd approach.
At the vicarage adjoining St. Michael's Parish Church on the fringe of Barnes Common, Studdy made the acquaintance of the Reverend John Heston, a balding man, kindly faced, with twinkling eyes and a ready smile.
Jane? Oh, yes, indeed, Mr. Studdy. She and I are old friends. You say her mother sent you here?
Well, yes, indirectly. The point is, she's left home. I've been retained by Mrs. Heathcote to trace her.
I see.
Has she been here at all?
She was here this morning.
Oh?
To say goodbye.
Goodbye?
I understand all the formalities have been attended to. The ship leaves at the end of the week.
What ship?
Of course, you wouldn't know. She's been toying with the idea for a long time. Now she's finally made up her mind.
To do what?
Emigrate to Canada.
Somewhat taken aback, Studdy was quick to press the vicar for details. Heston declined to answer his questions, however, pointing out that any discussion he'd had with Jane Heathcote had been in confidence, and that what she'd told him he was not at all at liberty to repeat.
I'm sorry, Mr. Studdy, but there it is.
Oh, that's okay, sir. If you'll just tell me where I can find her...
Well, I don't see that that can do much harm. She's staying at a guest house in Kentish Town.
Uh-huh. And the address?
Not sure of the actual address, but the name of the place is Baltimore Lodge.
With this information, Studdy had little trouble in locating the guest house in question. And upon his arrival there, he spoke to the proprietor, who directs him to a room on the first floor.
Yes?
Jane Heathcote?
That's right.
How do you do? I'm Paul Studdy, Missing Persons Bureau.
Her face was devoid of makeup, and her figure, clad as it was in a drab grey frock, left a good deal to be desired. But there was much about her appearance which was very far from unattractive. Startled by Studdy's intrusion, she could do little else except stand there and stare as he explained who had sent him and why it was that he'd come. A pause of several seconds ensued before at length she broke the silence.
I'm leaving for Canada on Friday morning, Mr. Studdy. Please tell my mother she won't be seeing me again. Ever.
Uh-huh. I'll do that with pleasure, but... First, I'm kind of curious to know just what it was made you finally clear out after so long.
We had an argument. She lost her temper. Said a little more than she intended to. I've put up with a lot from her, Mr. Studdy. Her endless stream of affairs, the indignity she's heaped on me at every opportunity. But when she informed me that she didn't even know who my father was, something inside me snapped. I knew then I just had to get away from her. Over the past few years, I've constantly watched her trying to prove to herself and to me that age hasn't detracted from her charms, that she can still fascinate men and hold them. But she's fighting a losing battle, Mr. Studdy, and she knows it. In a way, it's rather tragic.
Tragic, but inevitable.
She's even managed to find solace in the fact that I've never been attractive to men. That she still has powers that I never possessed. And let's face it, she does.
No, there, I've got to disagree. I've got a hunch that her loss will be your gain. When you go over to Canada, you'll be starting off fresh. For the first time, you won't have to worry about being humiliated in front of others. There'll be nobody to humiliate you. You'll be on your own two feet. I think I'm a good enough judge of women to hazard a pretty firm guess that once you start walking on them, you won't look back.
Henry Simon returns to conclude this story in just a moment. And here again is Henry Simon.
Jane Heathcote duly sailed for Canada and has since settled in Vancouver. I understand she's now married to a Canadian and has a baby son. Not long after her departure, her mother featured prominently in a particularly unsavory divorce case. But what's become of her since then, I couldn't say. Of this I am certain, however. Her fate will not be an enviable one. And now, as always, this is Henry Simon inviting you to meet me here again, and for the present, bidding you au revoir.